Hi, my name is Kevin. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 2nd, 2008, and it's good to be here tonight celebrating, and I'd like to introduce my sponsor, Daniel D.
I'm Daniel. I'm an alcoholic.
Daniel.
A little nervous. I haven't spoken in a while. My sobriety date is October 22nd, 2001, so got a little over 8 years sobriety, and the speaker before me, hope I can speak as good as him. He was very eloquent. You know, real similar story growing up. By 5 years old, I knew I was a basket case. Felt really uncomfortable. My mom would allow me to go to kindergarten with cowboy boots and shorts. I wasn't allowed to wear those for too long because I'd kick people in the shin, so I wasn't allowed my cowboy boots. I was born up in New Jersey. My parents got a divorce when I was around 2.5, 3. And my mom quickly got married to a gentleman from down here. And we moved to Little Winter Haven in Central Florida. And I couldn't ask for a better father. My dad married my mom at 26 with me and my brother. And you know, it's just, I look at it still till today. You know, it was just amazing. I don't think I ever really heard him cuss or anything. Every once in a while, when we'd be out hunting, he'd say something, and you could tell he'd like look at you like, you know, this is what we do with the guys. When we're around the ladies, we play it cool. This last year was one of the roughest years of my recovery, so trying to get it together on where to start with this whole story. I started drinking somewhere in grade school. My brother's 2.5 years older than me, but my first drunk, I know for sure, was at 13. We decided to skip school, went to the bus stop. My buddy's like, hey, you know, let's not go. I got the keys to so-and-so's house. He's got a keg in the backyard. I'm watching the dogs. So I'm like, I'm 13, and I'm like, not a bad idea. I've never skipped school. So we go to this guy's place, and it was one of the most unique things that ever happened in my life. I mean, we got empty milk jugs, we're filling, you know, filling them up, drinking beer, passing out, filling them up, drinking. My mom was a school teacher, and this house is maybe a mile and a half from there. So as the day progressed, you know, we did not care what we did. We're walking around, we're going places, we're climbing inside, you know, houses being built. So one of our friends decides to pass out by this road with a bag of popcorn, and we didn't know. We just, you know, we would lose each other. And a lady went to my mom, and she's like, you know, I just saw so-and-so, you know, laid out, and he used to hang out with Daniel in grade school. You think maybe Daniel's not at school either? And my mom, you know, she is on my side. No, Daniel wouldn't do that, you know. She's told me the story. So then she gets a call from another friend, and my friend Javier's mom, and like, do you know if Daniel's like not in school? And no, Dan's in school, but you know, they found Chad passed out in, you know, this place. And so long story short, they come hunting us. So we got Miss Gonzalez and my mom on a hunt, and they find us. They at my buddy Michael's house, and the door was unlocked. They come in. We're all hiding. You got a Jack Russell Terrier attacking Miss Gonzalez's leg. She's got a shoe beating Javier. You know, Javier's blocking his mom. My mom's dragging me out, you know, trying not to smack me in front of everyone. And you'll see how my story and his were similar. My parents were weekend warriors, and the only thing my mom cared about was, did you do drugs? You know, did you do cocaine? Did you smoke pot? And I'm like, no, we just drank. She's like, are you sure? And they're like, well, we're taking you down to the hospital. We're getting a drug test, you know. And it just shows you the environment I grew up in. They were both professionals. It was, you go to work Monday, you work hard as you can. Come Friday, you hang out with your friends. You party as hard as you can with your friends, the kids, until you pass out Sunday, you know. And it was all fun, you know. I let it be a vacation. Let it be just, you know, hanging out at the pub. Whatever it was, but it was, I don't remember them not drinking on the weekends. And this is when you could still have alcohol in cars. So even on vacations, you know, there was alcohol in our car. You know, we just try to have mom or dad sober driving. So I quickly learned, this is when you could get paddled in school. So my mom calls the guy and says, you know, hit him as hard as you want. So he reminds me of that before he hit me. He's like, you know, your mom called here. She told me, you know, I can lay into you. And he laid into me. It was the last time I ever got a spanking by him and my dad. And I was just like, whoa, this stuff's got to stop. You know, I think what I'm going to do is go to school, make good grades, get the parents off my back. And this is where I kind of started conniving stuff. And I just started working. I would ask my parents, friends, like, you know, can I do something after school? Can I work for you? You know, so I would get like these jobs after school and I would just work. I'd go to school and then I'd work or make forts with my buddies. I wasn't that good in sports. My brother was a natural. You know, he could do soccer. He could do baseball. You know, I was like, you know, let me go make a fort and run around in my camo. And I tried sports. I played baseball and all that. But I, you know, you just know if you got it. And I didn't have it, you know. And I realized, too, now, you know, I didn't want to put the time into it. You know, he would focus and put his time into it. He loved it. And I was convinced I liked drinking beer. And so for the next couple years, I just worked and worked and stayed focused and, you know, bought a truck, getting ready. That was like a big deal in my little town, you know, get your truck and get ready. And, you know, like I said, I just hunt and fish a lot and drink beer. And so I'd saved up, you know, some money. And I always had this feeling like I was going to be left alone. Like, when my parents die, you know, there was going to be no security for me. And, like, I was going to just be kind of hanging out here in no man's land. And my grandpa had some property growing up. And I was always like, man, what happens if something happens with that property? I'll have no place to go, you know. And it's like my sanctuary. So I was 15 and I started asking my grandpa. I was just like, you know, I was like, you know, how do you buy property? And he's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, I want to buy some property. And he's like, are you for real? And I'm like, yeah. I said, I got like $2,000. And he's like, I don't know. He goes, let me tell you when there's an auction up here and maybe you can do something. So in some of these little towns in, see, that one was right around 1990. It was the end of one of the booms. Procter & Gamble was selling off a bunch of their small tracts, kind of like St. Joe Paper Company. So he called me up and he's like, hey, there's going to be a little auction. Not that many people know about it. And, you know, why don't you come up here and see if you can do something? And you'll see how this relates to my story, because, I mean, I would put, like, pride and money before anything. And so I go up there. And there's this little track. I got to put 10% down, and I end up getting a small piece of property. So I'm thinking, you know, I've arrived. You know, all I got to do now is go to college, get my education, hunt, fish, drink beer, you know, and I don't even have to leave Florida. I'm cool. I got a good family. I got a couple good friends. I'm set. My dad is like, he's like one of the coolest guys in the world, and that's all he did. You know, so I was just like, I'll be like dad. And to backtrack a little, my mom's Jewish and my dad's Christian. So growing up, it was kind of more on the spiritual side. We celebrated Christmas. We celebrated Hanukkah. We said, you know, a prayer before we went to bed. We said a prayer before we ate dinner. But we never went to church, really, and never went to much temple. So, but I did have a bar mitzvah, and it was just out of respect for my grandpa. And then they were like, whatever. So I was always curious about Christ because, like, I didn't really believe in him, but I grew up in a small country town. So every once in a while, like, somebody would find out, like, my last name's Davidson, but they would find out I'm part Jewish, and they would be like, dude, my mom told me you're going to hell, you know? And I'm like, really? And I'd go home, and I'm like, Mom, you know, Bart's mom said I'm going to hell. And she's like, don't worry about that, you know? And I'm sensitive, so, you know, I start thinking, man, I'm going to hell. And I haven't even done anything. And so that's pretty much high school for me. And I go off to college, go to University of Florida. You know, dream come true. My brother's there, running, kind of just doing the independent thing. My freshman roommate was rushing a fraternity, and you know, there's no one in my family that's in the fraternity, like not like a like fraternity like in college. And he's just like, come on, man, come with me, you know, check this stuff out. And I'm like, that stuff's not, like, it's not for me. And he's just like, come on, man, just go get lunch with me. I said, no, man. He goes, it's free. And remember, I'm a, like, you say free to me, I'm in. So it's the Jewish side or something, I don't know. So I go up there, and next thing you know, man, like, I got long hair at that time, and I'm going to, like, one of the nice fraternities, and I can tell it's kind of preppy, and because I've been that way before, and I've went through a few phases. So I put my hair up in my hat, and I dress, you know, kind of nice, and I start talking the game, and I eat the lunch, and then I'm like, well, man, I want to see if these cocky, arrogant guys like me, you know? So I fall right in for it, you know, and next thing you know, I want to see if they'll give me a bid, you know? And it wasn't that they were cocky and arrogant. It was, I mean, I was the cocky, arrogant guy, you know, looking back. You know, I wanted to fit in. So they knew what to do. They moved me to the guys that are kind of like the partiers and, you know, talking that. So anyway, I joined the fraternity. You know, my partying takes off. And then after being in the fraternity for almost a year, I decided, you know, this stuff's not for me. It's expensive, waste of money. And I started to get into the rave scene and started, you know, trying out other substances and just, you know, partying hard. So next thing you know, I can't stop. You know, it was only alcohol, and now I'm doing these other substances, and it's pretty much like a weekend thing. And then I made it to summer, and, you know, all summer long I was a lifeguard, and I taught swimming, and I worked at a place, and it was one of my, like, living amends. Like, it's hard to describe, but, you know, not to ever do something like that again, you know, like where I would party all night and then the next day be up, you know, teaching kids to swim or trying to watch people. I mean, I look back, you know, I mean, a kid could have drowned, you know, after being up all night. So school was starting the next semester, and I couldn't stop. I try quitting cold turkey. I end up staying up for about a week and a half. Had a just horrible episode of, you can call it DT / insomnia / mania. And next thing you know, my brother brings me home to my parents my sophomore year, you know, and I quit talking. And they're just like in shock, you know. They're Daniel that, you know, they love and adore. 1 year in college and he's already destroyed, you know. I'd lost, you know, I don't even know how much weight, you know, in the matter of months. So Next thing I know, my dad's friend shows up, and that morning I had came to and started thinking. And all I started thinking about was, shit, for the last year I didn't work. That's what the problem is. You know, I went to college, and I did this academia thing, and it messed me up, you know? And if I was working, I would have been busy, and I wouldn't have done all this alcohol and drugs. You know, that's what I need to do. I need to go back, go to college, and this time work and make it through. So right about then, my dad's friend shows up at the house, and I think he had about 10 years sober. I didn't know he was 12-stepping me until I went to treatment. And he came over, and he's like, you know, I've had a problem with alcohol and drugs. You know, I go to these meetings. I'm professional now and la-di-da-di. And remember, I already started thinking for a couple hours. And in the big book, it talks about hitting them right when they're down. And it's amazing to me. All it took was like 2 hours of convincing myself that, you know, it was something else. And I couldn't have heard a word this guy said. I'm just sitting there going, this guy has a hard life. He has to, you know, he goes to meetings, he doesn't drink, he doesn't drug, and he comes over and helps poor people like me when they're all tore up, you know. So I go back to college, it repeats itself maybe once a year. So I end up having a good streak of college, go back, studying agriculture, and I was in building instruction, and I became a senior, and I studied organic agriculture too at University of Florida. So all of a sudden I get this idea, like, you know, UF's not good for me. I got to go to like another school. I'm out of here. So I move out to Colorado. My brother and I open a little business, make a little money. Then I wasn't wanting to pay rent in Colorado because it's expensive. And I end up on the West Coast. And I just started driving. I was like, I mean, my mom will tell you, I've always been a seeker of God. Sometimes I've lost faith in Him, but I've always been a seeker. So I just took the money I had and traveled as long as I could, you know, in California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Wyoming, wherever, you know. And I hit some more bottoms, you know. I ended up asking God to take everything. Within a month, I ended up homeless, my dog taken from me, and my car gone. And that was probably one of the scariest times in my life. And I'd like to say that was the only time. That happened a few times. And then I ended up getting arrested when I moved back to Florida to finish up my degree. I ended up getting back on alcohol and drugs, and they talk about it being progressive. I'm speeding it up because I got 10 minutes, and I want to get into recovery. So I end up in treatment. I was sitting in jail for 2 months. My parents decided not to help me out. And this guy was doing 20 years next to me. There was another guy doing a lot of time, and I was only allowed out an hour a day because I was pissed. But I found out the problem was me. So I went to treatment, man, and it was the best thing ever for like a week. And then I asked if I could go back to jail, and people thought I was nuts. You know, I just can't believe, you know, one, that I'm sober today, and from 18 to 26, I just can't believe, you know, I went to jail. I ended up homeless. I ended up in a mental hospital. You know, I wanted to die. You know, I wanted to hurt my parents. You know, I wanted to hurt other people. You know, I mean, it doesn't make sense until I found out, you know, how, you know, corrosive alcoholism is. I mean, it will just eat a man or a woman to the core. I mean, it literally brought me to a place that I never thought, you know, when you were talking about that, you know, just never thought it could bring me to that place. And, you know, I just thought I like a drink. You know, I just like alcohol. That's it. And So I got a sponsor, and I did the third step, and he had me hit my knees. He told me to shave, you know, and I hated that one. I started to grow a goatee, and he's like, I don't want you thinking you're good looking or something. Why don't you try staying clean shaved? And he also goes, why don't you get another sponsor? And, you know, and I'm just like, geez almighty, this is tough, you know. Told me to make my bed. And that's a good feeling. I try to do that still today. The second hardest thing in sobriety was going through a breakup. Went through that around a year and a half sober. Doing the third step, getting to the third step was one of the toughest things because, like I said, I had a faith in a God. I believed in God. But it was so tough to think that, you know, this thing was going to help me and that this obsession to drink and drug. I actually stayed around just because I wanted to prove that the obsession to drinking and drugging wouldn't be lifted. Because it was, that's all I thought about. It was like I wanted to drink or I wanted to get high. Or I used to grow weed a little too, and that was like another thing. You know, I'd be like, you know, let me just go grow some weed. You know, I got a job, got another job, got a girlfriend, went through that. Long story short, you know, I really wanted to find the girl of my dreams, you know, and I wanted to find a good job. And, you know, around 3-4 years sober, I found both, you know. I got the girl of my dreams, I got a great job, and life, I couldn't ask for a better life. And then last April, like, everything just came undone. You know, the girl and I are still together, thank God. But, like, the job went upside down, money went upside down, my sanity went upside down. And, like, this gentleman was talking about, like, being sober and just all you got, you know, at the end of the day is your friends in this program, a God of your understanding, and I have no clue how it works, you know, because I look back and I just can't believe I didn't drink or drug. And I wasn't thinking about it, but I was batshit crazy, you know. And kind of like I love when he said, you know, if you ask for something, God's like here, and he asks if you can handle it, you know. And I had probably 4 major dreams that I've always wanted, and in like a 2-year period, they all came to the table and they all got removed like within 6 months or a year. And it was tough to accept, you know, that like, okay, here's a little taste of it, but it's not for you. And, you know, if it wasn't for, you know, sponsorship, friends, you know, working with other guys in this program, you know, I really don't know what I would do. You know, I mean, I still have rough days. You know, sometimes I feel like I'm crawling out of my skin and I just, you know, I don't know. You know, I just sit there and say a prayer. It happened to me today. I was self-employed for a while, and now I'm working in a desk 7-8 hours a day, you know, and about 4 o'clock, you know, I'm sitting there saying the serenity prayer and the third step prayer, you know, and I'm thinking, man, if these people only knew how tough this is to sit still at a freaking job. But I like the thing that was said earlier about honesty. You know, the more I talk to people and I get honest how I feel, it leaves God the opportunity to speak back to me. And, you know, there's people not just in the rooms but outside this room that, you know, work is just not that much fun sometimes, you know. Like my fiance will tell me, you know, it's just, it sucks. And, you know, it's nice to hear that sometimes because I still want things to feel real good all the time. And I'm a little baby when it gets down to it. Sometimes, you know, I will kick and scream if things aren't going my way. And thank God I have somewhat of a delayed reaction today. But on the side of, you know, recovery and, you know, getting sober, especially to the people that are just coming here, you know, in their first week or first month, you know, you know, all I can say is that, you know, AA will give you an opportunity to do what you want. You know, you'll really get an opportunity to do what you want. You know, you don't have to feel that pain, that misery. that pitiful, or whatever it is, says in there, I'm not good, pitiful and comprehensible demoralization. I was thinking about that the other day. Like, the shit alcohol and drugs will make you do. And it'll laugh at you, it'll hold you tight, it'll hold you down, and it'll dress itself up, and you'll think you're, or I'll think I'm partying, you know. And I love what my buddy says, you know, the party was over a long time before I got here. And I, you know, you were 23 when you got sober, I'm 26, you know, from 18 to 26, you know, a majority of that time, but a couple years. It was hell. I mean, it was just freaking hell. And I thought of getting a new job again, because I, like, I'm being honest, I don't know if I can handle this one right now. It's stressful. It's a numbers game again. But the reason I share that is because if it means staying sober and having a happy life and trusting my God, I may have to do that, you know. It may not, you know, be pretty in the short run, but people who've come before me in these rooms, that's what keeps my faith high most of the time. You know, when I hear people talk about, you know, I stayed sober at 20 years, I lost my wife to cancer or something, or, you know, the people, for me, you know, after my money situation, the people that have gone through, let it be bankruptcies or just, you know, huge money issues, and they stay sober through it. You know, it was all my faith was built on, you know, people telling their story at these meetings, and it's just something I need these days. I haven't been catching a lot of meetings during the week. I cram them in on the weekends. I don't like that. But one thing my sponsor taught me is you just do what you got to do to stay sober. And I'll end with this. You know, I still pray pretty much every day. I hit my knees in the morning. I try to read a daily meditation. I talk to alcoholics all the time. And the only thing I've been slacking on lately is catching quite a bit of meetings. That's one reason I love being self-employed, because it's just, I love meetings, I think, way too much. I hate thinking. And that was the cool thing about going to meetings. You could just hear a bunch of people talk, and even if you think they're full of shit, you know, who cares, you know? You know, you're staying sober, and it's like, I don't know, it's better than TV for me sometimes. So, I don't know. I'm pretty dry when it comes to talking, but... I'm running out of gas, so thanks.
Sorry. Jennifer Alcoholic. Dr. Bob's last message, delivered at the first International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio in 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this, with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in bed 5 of the last 7 months and my strength has not returned as I would like. So my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are 2 or 3 things that flash into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting, sorry, I'm nervous, to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is. So let's bear those 2 things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member, the tongue, and if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing, none of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency sorry. So that we're not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us. To our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much.